Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Continuing Interview with Judge Samuel Strauss, April 30th, 1984. At the conclusion of our last interview, you spoke of the floor plan of the court in the round, and then you went on to speak about the development of the crime laboratory here in Pittsburgh and its purpose. Could you tell us something that you recall about the initial efforts in starting this crime laboratory?
Well, the crime laboratory was pretty much well in its infancy as far as the metropolitan areas were concerned at that time. The guiding light was the FBI. We learned about certain progress that had been made in Chicago, Northwestern University, not in Chicago, it's outside of Chicago. We went up there and examined their crime lab.
Who along with you was part of the initial effort?
I'm not sure who went with me, but I remember that I was sent up by Rawhauser to get the information on the crime lab. And I did. We met a fellow by the name of Nichols up there, whom I was so impressed with that I came back and recommended that we hire him and pay him whatever was necessary so that he could help us set up a proper crime lab in the county. And we did. We got the various people together from Mellon Institute, from the University of Pittsburgh, the people who were dealing in the field of science and could help us in setting up a crime lab that could make investigations, test blood, determine what type it was, and fingerprint investigations and all of those things. And we set aside, or rather under Rawhauser, a portion of the fourth floor of the building was made into a crime lab at that time.
Fourth floor of what building?
Of the courthouse.
I see.
We had a crime lab unit there. The fellow that we first got was from Northwestern University, where I'd gone up for the purpose of taking courses to see what it was all about at the sent up by Rawhauser. We come back and we interested the mayor as far as the county was concerned.
Is that Mayor Lawrence?
The Mayor Lawrence and the county commissioners. We made them honorary members of the crime lab board. They had to contribute money to raising the money that we would need to buy the equipment. And we have, in the county, we have equipment even now. The crime lab has been moved from the courthouse to another building. But the equipment has been saved and is used by crime lab personnel who are specially trained in this type of work.
Do you recall when this occurred?
Well, I would say it was back in about the late 1950s that we set it up. Now, it has been moved, but it's still in existence. It has been very effective and very helpful.
How effective is it today?
Oh, well, it's effective today in the matter of examination of blood, fingerprints, and all sorts of matters of that type, which enable them to determine whether or not this person was on the premises the cause of death and all those matters.
Is it well staffed today?
It isn't as well staffed as it was some years ago, unfortunately. But it is, it's staffed. And they have some good men. They've got some men there that we had years ago that are still with them. And it's an essential thing for a community or a county this size to have their own crime lab, not to have to send off to Washington, D.C. for tests and matters of that sort, as they once did. We visited Detroit, we visited Columbus, Ohio, or rather I did, and about four other places, and then came back and made the request of the county commissioners and the mayor. They all joined in and set it up.
Is the FBI still involved with it?
The FBI is an independent agency. That's a federal agency.
Yes,
they do for the federal government what our own crime lab does for ours. And before that, we couldn't use the FBI laboratories for our tests. Now our tests are made by our own people.
I read that you were instrumental in developing a calendar control system to monitor criminal division cases. Could you tell me something about that?
Well, the calendar control aspect, the cases are limited. Right now, for example, we have in the system, we have a backlog of about 5,200 cases. It's the biggest that we've ever had. When we first set up the monitoring system, that was back in the 1970s. At that time, we had about an 1,800 backlog, which was appropriate. I mean, you couldn't expect a county this size to have less than that. But the 5,000 mark is it's a hard mark, and there are new procedures that are that we had introduced years ago, an accelerated rehabilitation program, ARD as we called it, and that was the purpose of that was to take the strain off the courts on first offenders in certain cases. What we would do if the people had never been involved in crime before. We would bring them in, talk to them about their whatever it was, and they would have to agree to do certain things that we required of them. For example, we would if they had committed some crime and they wanted to avail themselves of this type of a disposition, the accelerated rehabilitation. If it was not a major crime, we would require, for example, we would inquire as to what their religion was. We would then find out to what church they belonged. And we would, as a part of the punishment for the crime, without giving them a criminal record, we would require that they offer their services to the head of the church that they belonged to, that they would mow the lawn and do these things during the course of the summertime as part of their penalty. And then if they render a service either to the community or to their church. And if they did that and were successful and not involved in any further crimes, the crimes were dismissed without any criminal record. And that was a system that was set up then. It's still in existence, but it's too far gone to that. I mean, it's not what it was, but I don't indicate.
But to return to the calendar control system, what is that exactly?
Well, the calendar control system is a system by which there are assignments that are made to the different judges as the cases come into the system. And we have a calendar control office that makes certain that each judge gets the appropriate number of cases that he should have, and that is the basis of that system. And it's a workable thing, and it's a good thing, because otherwise you'd have utter chaos.
Yes. Well, you were instrumental in establishing
this. Well, it was set up during the time that I was the head of the division.
I understand that the National Center for State Courts, in a study of metropolitan court dockets, use this system as an example of a fast-moving system in comparison of 20 metropolitan court systems. So apparently it was recognized as excellent
device. We did. We searched out the top people in the community. And getting back to for a moment, the crime lab, we had Ed Weidlein from Mellon Institute. We had the head of the law department at Pitt. we had all of these people who were on the board to oversee the activities. I mean, we brought any, the mayor's office was interested in participating.
This is not operating as effectively today, you say.
Well, I think that it's not quite as it was then, that's true. But I mean, there's still the surface look at it is the same. They do still have the programs, but they're not as effective as they once were.
What are they doing with the very large backlog?
What?
What are they doing with the large backlog that they have now? You say there's
well,
5,
they're doing
000.
The best they can. Under the circumstances, the courtrooms are all filled. There's a time factor now that didn't exist at that time. And now the cases have to be tried within 180 days. Now, it's almost impossible for us to do it. We can get waivers from the individuals at times, and that's necessary. But the pressure is on. But there are cases that they're using the ARD today to rid themselves of some of these cases without the observation, the treatment, the care that was given to them initially. But they have to get rid of the cases when they appellate courts say that it's got to be tried within 180 days or else it can be dismissed. Sometimes the lawyers will go along with it. They don't. The cases fell
out. What has contributed to this backlog?
Well, there's more crime.
Yes, this is what I'm...
There's asking. More crime.
But do you have less personnel to cope with it? Is that not a factor?
Well, the courtrooms just, there are not enough of them to completely go through the system. And these things are, these matters are you just do the best you can. But it's not what it used to be. And I mean, we'll find that a large group of people going in every week, maybe 100 people. Or more, it could be up to 200 people a week to go in on these, their first offenders. They're given a speech about what they've got to do and that this is the last time they'll ever get this break. And as a matter of fact, that's about all. They don't follow up today as they once did, because even that's a burden to make all the contact. Well, we did it then. But, there are about 250 cases a week
More personnel would probably help, wouldn't it?
Well, it's hard to tell whether it's a problem of more personnel or the what you do or what the personnel does with it. That's the difference. And as long as there are time factors that say you try it within a certain period of time or else the case will be dismissed, the pressure is on.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure.
What type of cases did you try in the criminal division, principally?
When I was a trial lawyer?
Yeah, trial judge.
No, you mean as a judge or as a DA?
As a judge.
Well, I've tried all types of cases. I mean, as a trial judge, I try homicides, I try the major felonies, the rapes, the robberies, the burglaries. But I mean, there's no set or no... special. The murder cases are assigned to the individual judges, and I did a lot in murder work at one time, and I still try murder cases as they're given to me.
You find there are more males involved than females in this type of crime?
Oh, yes. There are more males that are involved in crime than
more blacks than white?
I wouldn't say that there are more blacks than white, but percentage-wise, I would say that there's a larger ratio among the blacks. But they're not certainly not more blacks that are involved.
Than there are blacks.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And proportion of Jews?
There are not too many Jews that are... involved in crime. I mean, that we can be proud
that's
of.
That's to our credit, isn't
that's
it?
That's to our credit, that's for sure.
Do you think that the recent ruling by the governor to restrict relief to single men has had any effect on increasing crime?
What do you mean?
Well, he has made the severe limitations on relief grants to single men.
Relief grants to single men?
Yeah. I mean, they're only entitled to relief for a certain limited period in the year, and then they go off. And I wondered if that...
I wasn't aware of that at all. But I don't think generally that the fact that they may receive money and sources when they're unemployed and need help, I don't know that that has any
correlation
to crime. Generally, I mean, you'll find cases, certainly, but not as a rule. I don't think one could conclude anything improper in that.
I understand you were a strong backer of the county bail agency set up in 1975.
That's right.
As an alternative to private bail bonding.
That's right.
Could you tell us something about this?
Well, the purpose for the bail agency that the court set up at that time, and at that time I was an administrative judge in the division, was to enable poor people that we didn't really have to fear would escape or not appear when their trial came up. It became expensive, the bail, or the money that they would have to put up in order to get a release before they were tried. And we did have set up the bail agency that would interview these people and would make a recommendation as to the type of bail they should put, whether it should be a straight bail of maybe $10,000 or $5,000 or $1,000, or whether it should be a percentage of that. A percentage would be, for example, a 5% or 10% of the figure would be set. Very few people who were engaged or came into conflict with the law had money in the bank that they could get bail on very easily. It wasn't that. I mean, it wasn't easy at all. But if somebody in the family had real estate, they wanted to post the bond, that was all right. We did try to screen them, and these people do, and they're helpful. They're still working well to see whether or not this person can safely be released on a lower bond so that the bondsman isn't the man that just puts off all the money.
Well, do I understand then that people in poorer circumstances were able to get bail in a lower
rate?
Was that the point of it?
Well, the setting of the bail was based on the probability that the person would be available, would not skip, if the person funds were limited, we would try our best to keep the bail low until they were found guilty of the offense.
I see. So that was where it differed from a private bail bonding agency.
Well, the court had to oversee it.
I see.
There wasn't a private bail bonding agency. There were private people who would put up bonds.
I see.
But they had their own standards. And they were out to make money. That's all they were concerned about.
True.
We were out to make the bail low enough that
it was manageable
and that it wouldn't create any great loss.
I see. But this is operating currently, is it?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I see. Now, you did indicate that your official status now was a senior judge.
Yeah.
And that is sort of a partial retirement plan, is that the idea?
No. What happens when you hit the age of 70, you are automatically a senior judge. I mean, that is if you are working and if you want to work. Now, Of course, there comes a time when the senior judge has gone for as far as he can go and handle the workload that is there. We have a number of them in the county, senior judges, who are contributing their parts. And a few of the original ones are getting pretty weak and are doing less and less. The time limit, it's hard to say. Judge Lauren Lewis is a senior judge. He works, I'd say, maybe 8 months out of the year. He takes off an extra couple of months at his age, but he's, Lauren is, I'd say he's in his 80s. Bill Rawhauser is a very fine, decent fella, and has been, and he's the fella who got me started in this business. He was in the same building, in the we had offices across the hall. He and Vanderbilt had a law firm, and I was in with Greenberg, and on the opposite side of the hall, that's where we all became acquainted. But Rawhauser, he's just about worn out. Rawhauser's in his 80s, too. Bob Vanderbilt is not well. He comes down, he does some work. Fred Weir is a senior judge. And we have one senior judge here, Judge Salmon from Beaver, who I think he's younger than I am, but he's a senior judge. And he has been sitting in this county because there is a need. With all the pressures on the trial.
I'm sure, with that backlog.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. That's the problem.
If you say modified schedule, then subject to your wishes?
It depends, I suppose, upon the age and the point at which. Now, Lauren Lewis happens to be a very sharp fellow for his age, and he does all right, but he does take off a little more time than I've taken off. And Fred Weir is working, as we get older, we get weaker. I'm beginning to realize.
All of us.
Yeah, that happens to all. That's right.
Judge Strauss, employees in your department, are they elected, appointed, or civil service?
No, my secretary, I selected.
Mm-hmm. You have that option.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be able to type.
No, I understand.
And they have to be qualified to perform the work. My first, the first secretary I had is married to a federal district judge that she met. He used to come up to the office when I was in the county court, and then when I went into the common pleas court, Ziegler. Don Ziegler was a very fine, bright judge in the federal court. And his wife was my secretary, and I have another one now.
But you have that option of hiring yourself. I mean, there are no civil service appointees.
No, but they have to be able to type.
No, I understand.
And
that.
Take shorthand.
Yes.
I mean, they have to be able to perform that function. Mm-hmm. And I have a very fine secretary now, who does a lot of work and is familiar with the requirements and who fits in very well to the system. And we have a law clerk, and he does a lot of the research.
Now, he would be an attorney, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I see. Now, on what basis is he hired? This is not...
Well, he's hired because the work of a judge is such that it's one thing, you're trying cases all the time. And if you're going to have to review cases that you have tried and which have been decided, and then because somebody doesn't like the idea of being in jail, they hire a lawyer and they file a brief. So that we can't work currently every day and still carry our own workload as to the the cases that are reviewed or that they're filing motions to an appellate court on. So that a judge who works really needs a...
The secretary, the law clerk, are subject to your jurisdiction. You hire them, you...
Yes. I mean, they're paid for at county expense, of course. Not out of our salaries, but they have their own groups that meet, mm-hmm. and that each judge has his own secretary. I mean, that's because...
But it is not a civil service setup.
No. No, it's about. Not a civil service setup.
I see. Well, so much for your career. Can we turn to your family now?
Yes, you may. Just make sure I've got everything that I should have here. All right. Yeah. I do have some things here that you might be interested in. Those are little cards that I had when I ran.
Well, let's put this on tape first.
All right.
Thank you. You have how many children?
I have two sons.
Two sons. Yes. And how old are they?
Well,
and their names, please.
Joel. Joel is in his, I'm trying to figure you got me now.
Is Joel the older?
Joel is the older of the two.
Hmm.
And Joel went to Yale University. He's 43 years old at this point in time. He went to Yale University on a Kennedy Friend scholarship. That is for his undergraduate. He went to the University of Michigan for his law degree. And he's an assistant U.S. attorney and has been for about 12 years.
Here in Pittsburgh?
Yes. He's in that office. Married in 1968, has one daughter who's at the school in Shadyside. What's the name of it?
Ellis?
Yeah, Ellis or what's
Winchester?
It?
Winchester.
I think it's Winchester. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's Winchester.
He married a Pittsburgh girl, did he?
Yes.
And the younger son?
Henry Lee. Oh. He graduated, got a BA degree from Washington and Lee University in May of 1973.
Mm-hmm. How old is Henry?
Henry? Mm-hmm. Well, Henry now, he's put some time in. Let me see. Joel's
40.
He's old, on a Kennedy Friend scholarship. Henry is, I thought I'd written that down. Henry was about 6 or 7 years younger.
I see.
Yeah. What? 36.
33.
Yeah. Henry got his bachelor's degree at Washington and Lee University in May of 1973. He had a master in education at the University of Virginia in 1975. Now, he is now an assistant director of a juvenile attention home. That's what they call it there.
Juvenile attention home.
I see. That's what they call it.
Where is
it? In Charlottesville, Virginia.
I see.
And he has been there for a number of years now. And he likes it.
I see.
And he's living in Charlottesville there.
Is he married?
You know, he's getting ready to get married this June.
So you have one grandchild then?
One grandchild, that's right.
Is that a granddaughter or grandson?
That's a granddaughter.
I see. When your children were young and at home, what activities did you share as a family regarding patients, hobbies, that sort of thing?
Well,
what did you like to do together?
Well, we like to go down to the beach together
uh-huh.
in the summertime. That was the big deal that we were interested in those days. We used to go down to the shore at Beach Haven
oh, yeah.
with a number of our local friends who made a habit of going down during
Pittsburgh
the summer.
Resort.
That's right. That was a Pittsburgh group. And we enjoyed it for many, many years. And, well, we haven't been at it recently, that's for sure. But that was our earlier period, and we liked it very much. Yeah.
What was your religious affiliation during these years? I mean, what congregation did you affiliate with?
We, when I was in Bristol, Tennessee, there were a limited number of Jewish families in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
There were neighboring communities, Johnson City, Tennessee, which was 30 miles one way, Kingsport, Tennessee, 25 miles another way. But in Bristol, they had a few more Jewish people. And believe it or not, they set up a synagogue in the town. For a very limited number of people.